performance by Cliff Lee.
Victorino in the alley calling. He's got it! And the Phillies are going back to the World Series!
Welcome to Continued Success on this Saturday morning, the first game of spring training just hours away for the Phillies. I am Justin Clue of Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. With me is Liz Rocher of Yahoo Sports. And did I say this is Continued Success? Because I'm saying it now. Good morning, Liz.
Good morning, Justin.
Wow, what a fresh, you know, we're putting the schedule together for this episode. We kind of skipped over the fact that the first spring training game for the Phillies was going to be a topic of discussion. We now have the full list of suspects who will be batting in the first Phillies game of this 2020 season. Liz, are you ready for this? Have you seen this?
It was waiting for me on my phone when I awoke.
It's a pretty classic spring training lineup. A couple of starters, not really. It's Scott Kingery at second, Adam Haseley's in center, Rhys Hoskins at first. Nick Williams, still around. Totally forgot.
I forgot about him completely. Wow.
Right field hitting cleanup. Devi Gurion is catching. Logan Forsythe's shortstop, I guess. No, he's at third. Mikey Matouk is in left. Ronald Torres is at short. And Phil Gosselin is hitting DH, which I didn't realize this.
Melvin preps Phil Gosselin, everyone.
The numeric value of DH is listed here as zero by Matt Gelb. Is that real? I don't think I knew that. It just says Gosselin, zero, which seems like an insult, even though it's not. But that's what we're looking at. First day of spring training. Should be a lot of fun for a couple minutes. No, it should be a lot of fun.
Should it? I think that's about all we can expect. I mean, it's Nick Williams and a bunch of dudes
is the kind of lineup Joe Girardi's going to trot out there on a daily basis, he should be fired immediately, honestly.
Into the sun. No regrets.
No, a classic preseason lineup full of some familiar faces and some other guys Phillies want to get a closer look at. I mean, this is a pretty typical first day of spring training check. They're playing the Tigers at 105 in a warm and breezy Clearwater climate. Is this first game starting? Is this making you feel any better about baseball, Liz?
That there's actually going to be baseball for us to focus on? I'm psyched. Yeah. I'm real tired about thinking about, like, it's time. I'm tired of evaluating the Phillies lineup on paper and being yelled at by people who don't like that. I am not a huge, I'm not overly thrilled with parts of it. I just want to see it now. It's time to watch baseball. I'm done. I'm done, with conjecture. I'm done with projections. Let's play some baseball. I'm ready.
I am not done with those things, but I will be doing them during actual baseball games, which is
the point.
I watched a couple pitches of that game that the Red Sox played against Northwestern yesterday just to get a taste, just to remind myself what that felt like. And it's a little bit like scraping bottom. Watching the Red Sox always feels a little gross, and playing a college team is always like, yeah, it's even tough to suspend reality. But hey, look, it's baseball. And frankly, at this point, focusing on the raw aspects of baseball rather than like who is playing and what's the context of this, it's a form of escapism and kind of the healthiest way you can go about it sometimes. So very excited that the Phillies are starting to play baseball today. Less excited about some of the stories surrounding the Phillies as they begin preseason. And I know the number one thing we probably want to talk about right now is a complete out of left field change that we were told about yesterday. If there was one thing about Philadelphia Phillies baseball, if there's one thing about Philadelphia sports that you thought was never going to change, it would be the physical appearance of the Philly fanatic, which we were told yesterday, that's going to be, he's getting some adjustments, according to Jim Salisbury of NBC Sports Philly.
The biggest story, he's broken all season.
Says his shoes might be different, socks too, some of his measurements may be different.
That's where the alarm bells should start going off.
Right. So look, I have a lot of trust in Tom Burgoyne, as Salisbury says, the comic personality of the fanatic has been developed over 41 years by Burgoyne and before him Dave Raymond, one of the inventors of the fanatic. But this whole situation, which just sounds weird. I mean, we'll talk about what has caused this in a second, but right now, just on the surface, the fanatic's appearance changing. I know I'm not doing anything to combat the notion that we all, like, our eyes roll back into our heads and we start flailing our arms and screaming gibberish anytime anything a little bit unpleasant or strange happens around here.
Change in general.
But, you know, I had a whole day to think about it, and if anything, I felt worse about this than I did at the beginning.
It should not make you feel good at all.
No.
So, I think everyone listening to this most likely at least has heard about the lawsuit. The two puppeteers in the 70s who helped create the Fanatic and who built the costume are suing the Phillies. And at its core, this case is about they don't feel like they were paid enough for what the Fanatic has brought to the Phillies. And I think in a way that's actually kind of fair.
Do we know what they were paid? Not that I would really be able to form an opinion based on that.
I think there was some in the mid-70s and early 80s. I think they stopped paying, because I read the entire complaint back when it was, you know, the entire, it was like 35 pages or something like that, when it was filed in court. I believe the whole sum that they were paid amounted to, over several payments, a couple million dollars.
You know, it's tough to probably put a figure on what the Fanatic is worth to the Phillies. I mean, at this point, he's his own sub-brand. He's got DVD specials. He's got coloring books.
Children's books.
Right, exactly. Like, he's his own thing at this point. Now, that being said, earlier, I guess last season, when talk of this negotiation first surfaced, the joke was like, oh, is the Fanatic going to, like, move on? Are the Phillies going to be without the Fanatic? And I think even the Phillies, a team that's dumb enough to change the Fanatic, isn't dumb enough to lose the Fanatic, I guess. But at the same time, do you think, you know, with the Fanatic being his own sub-brand, do you think if he were to split away from the Phillies, he could be his own thing and just, like, exist without the Phillies, even though his name is the Philly Fanatic?
No. I mean, the purpose of this is for the puppeteers to regain the copyright and then license it to the Phillies for a fee. The Phillies do not want that. I don't think the puppeteers even sued them. I think the Phillies preemptively sued these guys to get the copy, you know, to definitively get the copyright, which could bite them in the ass almost immediately, because they do have the chance of losing it now. All they had to do was pay these guys, these people who created Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
This was, you know, they built the original Miss Piggy.
Right.
They, and I've lost my train of thought because I was thinking about how awesome the Muppets are.
Happens a lot. And by the way, ass biting, one of the Fanatic's favorite go-to performances, just for the record. It's a little ironic that we're phrasing it like that. But no, I wonder, and I feel like you were probably hitting on this, if not addressing it directly, but like, why the Phillies feel like they have to outmaneuver these people rather than just pay them.
Yeah, because that's what I was going to say. They'd been seeking money from the Phillies, and the Phillies said, no, we're just going to sue you. We're going to sue you before you sue us. They could have just paid him. God forbid John Middleton's yacht not get redecorated this year or something, because I can't imagine it's going to be a franchise crippling amount. I mean, and here's the thing, it could be, and it still might be fair, because the Fanatic is everything. The Fanatic is everything for the Phillies. There's a reason that they haven't changed it. But the reason that they are changing it is to try to avoid the copyright problems. Because if they change it enough, they should be able to use it without interference, which is a terrible idea. Mm-hmm. Maybe we won't notice it. But now that they've announced it and that everyone's looking for it, no one's going to like it. That's really just the way it is.
Well, the thing is, they unveiled Gritty, and remember there was about 20 minutes where everybody hated Gritty, and then something happened, and everyone was willing to die for Gritty. Now, I'm not saying this is the same thing. This is something we've come to know and love changed, which the Fanatic doesn't deserve to have to do that. You know, when the NBA New Orleans Pelicans mascot was debuted and looked like an abysmal nightmare, and then, like, underwent the narrative of getting cosmetic surgery to fix its face so it would be less scary. That was like a new mascot. Still weird that they played it off like that, but cool, lean into it. Marketing didn't pay off the way it probably should have for that, but that was like a new thing and they were still making adjustments. Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, they released that trailer. Sonic looked like, I don't know, like a kid that had been cursed and turned into a blue hedgehog. Not Sonic the Hedgehog. Went on hiatus, redesigned him. Now he looks, you know, better. The Fanatic has been around for so long, and the reason behind changing it, even, you know, I don't know if there would have been a good reason for it. At least they're not just like, the Fanatic needs a new modern look and, like, you know, give him a backwards hat
Poochie.
And a skateboard. Yeah, poochify him. In this case, it's kind of even stupider that they're well, let's outsmart these puppeteers by changing this beloved figure in some way that no one is going to like. They must know.
They have to know.
No one is going to like.
Like, when you talk about changing his shoes and socks, who cares? The Fanatic wears weird stuff all the time. But what measurements on him could be different that would actually make a difference? And that's usually just, it's the measurements of his giant stomach and maybe his snout. Maybe how tall he is. How tall he is really wouldn't, you know, I don't think that would matter to people. But changing dimensions of his snout and the weird tongue that comes out and his midsection, like, those are, that's what the Fanatic is.
The thing is,
the Fanatic is essentially a man wearing a barrel.
The thing is, these changes have to be drastic enough that they felt like they couldn't just make them and not tell anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They had to announce it beforehand so there wouldn't be a whole problem. Now it's kind of like, all right, we're able to preempt. They knew Twitter would, you know, run wild with this, make a ton of jokes and, you know, in essence, promote it on its own. But like, it's got to be bad enough, or I'm saying bad in this case as a synonym for different. It's got to be drastic enough that they felt like they couldn't get away with just sneaking it by. And that alone is so concerning. Mm-hmm. I don't want a different Fanatic. Like, we'll get used to it, I guess. But that it's come to this feels really bad.
Yeah, I mean, and here's, like, it's, this is just for the lawsuit. This is just in case they lose control over the Fanatic. So, I mean, it portends lots of bad things. Like, they don't believe that they have a strong enough case now after suing them like idiots. It's just the worst idea. It's the worst thing. I can only hope that if they end up winning, they'll go back to the original Fanatic because they'll own the copyright. Because this seems like a terrible idea. If they bring this Fanatic north, I don't know what the city of Philadelphia will do to it.
They could just, hide it as like, that was the spring training Fanatic. And then like he eats
like the red Fanatic. God.
Right. He eats a bunch of strangers at a gas station. And then by the time he gets to Philly, he's gained all his weight back. You know, something like that. Easy. I can write this narrative, Phillies, as long as you're okay with him being cast as some kind of Lovecraftian horror, which is apparently all I'm capable of imagining the Fanatic as.
To be honest.
Do you think that they know for certain that the changes they've made are enough to be different from the Fanatic? I mean, I'm going to talk to you as if you're a lawyer.
I'm not. Let's all be clear. I am not a lawyer.
Do you think that, A, they already know the changes they've made are enough, or this is an experiment in seeing what is enough? And do you think, isn't the name Fanatic, wouldn't they have to change that to avoid too many similarities, or they can still call it the Fanatic? Like, that seems like the main part of this, that they would just kind of sneakily change it to an F, and you wouldn't, hopefully no one notices.
From what I can tell, it's not about the name, it's about the design of the character.
Oh, right, because they are the puppeteers. True, true.
Yes,
true.
It's about the design of the character that they're seeking, and, you know, they're asserting that they had a larger role in designing it and bringing it to life than the Phillies are admitting. Dave Raymond, I think, had a huge role in that, and the Phillies maintained that he's the one that really brought it to life. He's the one that gave it everything that it needed to be and that the puppeteers did not do as much. And puppeteers are, of course, saying the opposite. I don't think they would make changes to the Fanatic if they had not consulted with actual copyright lawyers to figure out, are these enough for us to escape these problems until we, you know, get this settled? And I think they wouldn't make these changes if they didn't know. They wouldn't go through this with their, you know, Philadelphians love change to long-established things. They love change and new characters. Hitchbot famously lived for years in Philadelphia.
He's got a little, one of the houses on Boathouse Row now. He's retired to a nice life of quietly rowing
his boat.
No one
beat the shit out of him 5 seconds after he rolled into the friggin' city.
He's definitely not dead. I promise you that.
Like, I just have an image of the new Fanatic, like, walking around Philadelphia while a group of angry pitchfork-wielding Philadelphians just right. run him down.
Yeah, just slowly, like, he's walking down the street, notices two people behind him, suddenly it's five, suddenly it's 12, and he's just like, and they're like, get him! Yeah, that's bad. There's
we
just
can
no
see
way.
We can predict. This is what's going to happen, guys.
Do you feel like the Phillies, you know, after, and I know this is, this you can make the argument, oh, this is not how, it's not as simple as that. That's fair. But on the outset, it gets interpreted as simple as this. Do you think after the JT Realmuto arbitration case, which we're going to talk about after the break, and this situation with the Fanatic where being unwilling to pay for what someone wants, which, hey, maybe they're asking for like an astronomical, ridiculous mm-hmm. amount, and the Phillies are like, well, we won't do that. But like, since we don't know that, do you think not being willing to pay the puppeteers and therefore having to change the Fanatic, not willing to pay the small amount of disparity between the figures in the JT Realmuto arbitration case, I feel like the Phillies are one more story like this away from getting a season-long reputation as cheapskates after spending $330 million on Bryce Harper last year, which is what they would say. They would say, oh, you're going to call the team that spent $330 million on a free agent cheap. And, yeah, well, I mean, you could throw in the stay under the luxury tax narrative. And
oh, yeah, that's stuff that it's going to bring up.
We're looking at a team that's not super excited about spending money after a season last year defined by the phrase stupid money. What's changed? Is John Middleton in with some loan sharks? What's going on?
That would at least make it interesting, more interesting than I suspect it is, which is he saw last year that he could make a lot of money, and mm-hmm. he wants to continue making a lot of money.
I think a lot about the Simpsons scene where Homer's auto dialer is calling people trying to scam them out of a dollar, and Mr. Burns answers the phone and says, I think I'd be happier with the dollar, which is how I'm imagining John Middleton. I would be happier to have the money right now after spending so much last year. Let's take some time to have our money and just have it and
yeah.
be near it and know it's there.
I mean, you don't
billionaire stuff.
You don't say I'll go over the luxury tax at midseason if we're doing well enough, if there's a player who's
that's
worth
stupid.
It. Like, that's essentially what he, from what I could tell, that's the message he's conveyed to Klentak and McPhail, because they've said repeatedly, we will not go over the luxury tax.
I love it.
Unless there's a good reason to, unless there's like a big player available. And that means they have to be doing well enough at midseason to justify it, which is all sorts of conditions on it. Like, he does not want to go over the luxury tax. And his first time offenders going over by maybe $10 million, he would not have to pay that much. And next year, with Arrieta's salary coming off the books, they'd be down again. So this is all just like reshuffling deck, you know. It's just reshuffling deck chairs on a sinking ship. It's really annoying.
Happy first day of spring
Happy
training, everyone.
Happy first day of spring training. I'm back. It took me 5 seconds to get angry at the Phillies again. Sorry, everyone.
Think about that ship that sank, killing over
I was thinking about the Titanic shaped like the Fanatic.
lots of cool stuff to talk about. We will not be talking about any of that coming up after mm-hmm. the break. We'll talk about JT Realmuto, his potential with future with the Phillies, and what happened in his arbitration case recently right after this. Liz, when the Phillies traded Sixto Sanchez, their top prospect, for Marlins catcher JT Realmuto, we raised a few eyebrows. They threw a couple more prospects. Jorge Alfaro went in that trade. I believe it was a prospect named Will Harris went in that trade. And in exchange, the Phillies skyrocketed from, you know, lower tier at the catching position to the number one spot in the catching position. And Real Muto has done nothing but reward them for that decision. He was their sole all-star in 2019. He won a gold glove. He won a silver slugger. He even finished 14th in the National League MVP voting. I would say probably no one else on the Phillies came even close to the to the recognizable output Real Muto had last year, when he hit better than most people in the lineup. He hit more consistently than anyone else in the lineup, even though he was slashing 275, 328, 493. Wound up being worth 4.4 wins above replacement, which was right about where he was last year, or in 2018 with the Marlins. So this is a guy you want on your team, and this is a guy who, coincidentally, is headed towards free agency at the end of 2020. So if you want that guy on your team, gotta lock him up. Gotta give him a deal he wants. Gotta give a deal you're comfortable with, but probably one that he's more comfortable with. That's an exchange you get at least the first couple of years, barring no bad luck. Some of the most significant output at the most difficult position in baseball. So that's something we've all been waiting for and considered essentially inevitable, that the Phillies are going to lock JT Realmuto up. They get too much from him not to. They gave up too much for him not to. And I don't see how this team could expect itself to be taken seriously if the situation arises where they do not have JT Realmuto entering spring training at this point in 2021. However, the club and JT Realmuto went into an arbitration hearing over a figure. The Phillies offered him $10 million for a year. He wanted $12.4 million. They went to an arbitration hearing. The team won, as they typically do. The Phillies have, I believe, only lost one arbitration in their history, and that was to Ryan Howard. And, beforehand, Realmuto would be asked a lot about how he saw his future playing out. Did he want to stay in Philadelphia? And I felt like little by little, his quotes got more and more positive and specific that, like, yeah, I'm open to anything, to like, oh, yeah, sure, I want to be here in, you know, Philadelphia. This
and I could see my
place.
Family in Philadelphia long term, that type of thing. His adorable family.
Exactly.
Follow them on Instagram, kids.
It was all very positive, and you know, it was a point of contention among fans just because we wanted it to happen. We wanted to just get locked up, and it still probably will. And the outcome of the arbitration hearing, Realmuto expressed some disappointment, some frustration, but he and every writer covering it stressed that he was talking about the system and how it tilts in favor towards the teams to win these hearings rather than with the Phillies specifically. But there was a detectable tonal shift in his quotes following this that seemed to concern people. He wound up entering, we were saying that he seemed to have a more positive outlook every time they talked to him. But after the arbitration hearing results came out and he was asked about this again, he said, again, I haven't even spoken with my agent about that. I have no idea what's going to happen. I can't predict the future. I don't know where we're going to go with it. Obviously, we'll have those discussions, whether it matches up or not. That's to be determined. So it's not even the most negative thing. And at this point, reading it out loud, I'm like, are we just looking to be concerned about this? But I feel like if this was most other people on the team, we wouldn't be as concerned about them. But it's because Realmuto plays such a central role, because so few guys were as consistent and good as he was last year, that the idea of possibly losing him and the idea of the Phillies being foolish enough to fall down the steps and faceplant on what seemed like a sure thing, for some reason, that's all too imaginable. And I think word is that it's predicted by many, by John Stolness, our colleague. I believe MLB.com released a list of bold predictions for each team in training camp. And all they said for the Phillies was, our prediction is the Phillies lock up JT Realmuto before the end of spring training. That would be great. I would love to see that, even without thinking about what the tail end of a 7-year deal for a 29-year-old catcher would look like. But whatever, we live in the now around here, and yay. So this deal that they would sign, this extension, would probably be historic. They talk about the precedent being Joe Mauer's record average value as a catcher. That was sizable at the time. I believe that was like $23 million per season for 5 or 6 years. So, Liz, I mean, where are you at here? I don't think we're necessarily at death's door here as far as JT Realmuto re-signing with the Phillies. I can see some appeal to him wanting to test free agency. He'll only be, you know, be turning 30 in 2021, but I don't see how the Phillies, they must. It just seems like he's got more leverage. They need him more than he needs them.
100%. He has to know. He has to know that. That arbitration, this arbitration here will be the last time he doesn't control his own destiny. Because now he gets to choose where he wants to go. And he gets to dangle the fact that without him, the Phillies are at best a fourth place team. He gets to dangle that in front of them. And I can't imagine that they don't see it. They have, you know, the Phillies have to see the power dynamic here. And so it's time to pony up. I mean, I was thinking about what I would want, and I would rather go with a higher annual value for 5 years, have him, you know, maybe an maybe a mutual option for a sixth year. I would not want to give a catcher a almost 30, excuse me, an almost 30-year-old catcher like a 7-year deal. Mm-hmm. My God, no. But I think 5 years at a high annual value, I mean, God, in 5 years, he might be like, you know what? I think maybe I'm done squatting behind the plate for, you know, 9 innings a day for 150 games a year.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you look at the, if the Phillies were to lose him, which I don't think they will.
They can't. They literally can't lose him. They have to back up a Brinks truck immediately.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you guys made a good deal. You guys made a good deal. Like, you traded a valuable piece that could come back to haunt you, but is it really coming back to haunt you when you got such a good player out of it? Like, you guys made a deal that made this team better. It was something of a dice roll, but not even really that much. You knew what kind of talent Realmuto had. You knew how much of a talent gap you had at catcher, and you went out and acquired him. And now you have him. You made a good deal. Make it last longer than 2 seasons, because it should. And he deserves it, and the team deserves it, frankly. Especially
and
with
we
behind
deserve
him.
It as fans.
Let's make this about us, the people who really the protagonists of this story.
Always.
Yeah. I mean, when you look what's behind him, I mean, Andrew Knapp, obviously, I don't think is any sort of long-term, no one considers that a real long-term solution. He's a backup catcher and first baseman, sort of, I guess. Big, great clubhouse guy who everyone loves, but obviously Andrew Knapp is not the Phillies catcher of the future, regardless of what happens to JT Realmuto. And you look at the free agent class that Realmuto is still technically a part of, and you got Mike Zunino and Yadier Molina, who will be alongside him in free agency in 2021 at the moment. So I don't know what do the Phillies do if they lose Realmuto? What do they do at catcher?
Disband.
What do they do? Trade for another catcher of some kind? Like, they don't have the I would imagine they don't have the capital for that.
No, I mean, Devin Grillion on... I think is the guy that they.
Oh yeah.
I mean, do you remember where we were just over a year ago? Like, we were looking at this team and thinking, well, they might sign Bryce Harper. Mm-hmm. And then what did they do? And we were looking at a season with, what, Andrew Knapp at catcher?
Yeah, we I mean, looking... correct me if I'm wrong, but did that Realmuto trade sort of catch a lot of people by surprise?
It caught all of us by... I remember it very, very well. I caught all of us by surprise because we had... The Phillies had not really entered let's win mode. They, you know, everyone was still playing around with the Harper idea. You know, and there was a rumor that Realmuto could be traded, but the Phillies had, I think, barely been mentioned.
The Braves were mentioned significantly, and that's who I'd be afraid of picking him up if they let him go to free agency, just to make it even worse.
Yeah, pretty much. I would just assume that any good player the Phillies let go will be signed by a direct competitor.
Yeah.
In the NL East.
And deservedly so.
Yeah.
If they let him go, they deserve whatever ill will comes to them, frankly.
But, like, I can't. Like, remembering where we were last year, even setting aside the Harper stuff, we were literally trying to figure out how they were going to get a winning season out of a team with Andrew Knapp at catcher. Like, that is a reality that barely exists, that does not exist anymore. Like, we can't. Mm-hmm. They would have to find another good catcher. And I don't think David Grillion has, knowing admittedly not a ton about him, my guess is that it might take a while for him to get to the JT Realmuto stage, you know, where he's that good, if he can ever.
Yeah, it would take. Yes, I agree.
That's what I'm saying. Like, if they want to maximize their winning chances now, when they've got, you know, a couple of young players that are approaching the peak, like, they've got to do it right now. They have to do this now, and losing JT Realmuto is not an option. They literally can't do it and still compete.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah,
I'm sorry. I was like, there's nothing else to say.
It's kind of an open and shut thing, and surely they're aware of that. It's just a little concerning that it's even gotten to this point. I mean, granted, we know nothing about what's going on behind closed doors, and really, I don't even know how, you know, everything we've heard out of this so far, there's been some writer or some insider who's stood up and been like, yeah, but you know what, this is all very normal, or this wasn't about that, this was about something else. And, you know, it's calming in its own way, but yeah, I mean, you're looking at this team's future at catcher, and it's a little more concerning because somebody like Davy Gruyan is, yeah, he hit well at Lehigh Valley last year. He slashed .283, .354, .496. Yeah, it's just he doesn't reputationally have the value you want or the stability of a starting everyday catcher in Major League Baseball. So it's, and we know what Andrew Knapp can do. So
which is nothing. Sorry.
I mean, you're basically starting over again at catcher, which, again, nothing about this makes sense for the Phillies to not re-sign, like, extend him. There's just nothing that makes sense about it. And if they did it, and, oh, man, like, let's not get worked up about things that haven't happened, but just imagining, we're going to get worked up, an Andy McPhail press conference explaining why they couldn't re-sign JT Realmuto, watched him go to a divisional rival in this scenario, and are going with some, you know, quad A catcher as the starter for 2021. If you're Bryce Harper, I mean, I don't know how you even swing that as a team ambassador.
I mean, the good news about that situation is that it almost certainly wouldn't be Andy McPhail making the announcement, because he would have been fired. Because God, I think that the McPhail-Klentak tandem will be shown the door.
Right. I mean, how could you see any value in your front office if they let something
between
like that
happen? And if they have a terrible season, if they can't land anyone decent at the deadline, if they can't extend Realmuto and he leaves, any one of those singularly would be grounds for firing. And
absolutely.
So, like, this is we've been waiting for this season. This season ahead of us, we've been waiting for this season for a long time, because this is make it or break it for the Phillies. They have to do well, or we're going to see big changes behind the scenes.
You know, for a moment, my concerns were squashed by the fact that the Phillies put JT Realmuto on the front of their media guide this year. He's standing between his gold glove and his silver slugger, and the timing was pretty ironic given that they had just defeated him in an arbitration
hearing.
Friggin'
sign him, man. He's standing between
less money.
On
then
the cover
showcased,
of the media guide.
Showcased all the awards that he had won in the previous season, his only season with the Phillies thus far. But one thing I noticed, Liz, you know, he's not wearing a Phillies uniform in that picture. He's wearing a tuxedo and standing between two
trophies. Oh, he's wearing a tuxedo. Oh, I thought you were going to say that he's wearing, like, you know.
He's shirtless. He's doing push-ups.
God, I wish. I wish. I would assume that he was wearing, like, what you see baseball players in commercials wear.
They couldn't afford the rights to their own.
Their own that uniform. He was just wearing, like, a plain white one with, like, red, you know, like slightly off-red pinstripes.
Yeah, it's he's not wearing a tux. He's just wearing like a sport jacket and a dress shirt. And he is in the background where they have a shot of him like at the plate in his Phillies uniform and in his catching gear in a Phillies uniform. But like these are like faded images that almost look like they're ghosts of former JT Realmutos that lived before and that time is over. Am I reading too much into this? I don't think I'm reading enough into this. Are they saying that JT Realmuto is dead and the one with no uniform who will go off to seek his future elsewhere, a journeyman across this country, bringing his talents to whatever city will pay him fairly? Is that the message we're supposed to receive from the media guide? Answer me, Liz.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
No, I think this is certainly worth talking about, but I don't think we need to be as concerned, perhaps, as we have been about this. However, it's something I just wish the Phillies would get done so that it is not something that even elicits a little bit of concern.
Yeah.
Do you think they extend him before the end of spring training? That feels so soon.
Yeah, I was going to say no. Like, I remember we were surprised by the NOLA extension, which I do believe happened during spring training. And I think he avoided an arbitration hearing with that deal. Mm-hmm. I think he very much, I don't think anyone wanted to go to arbitration with NOLA, but I don't think they get it done in spring training. And then that's sort of it, when it's not done in spring. I think people say that they're going to get it done in spring training because once the season begins, most of the time extensions don't get done. So, excuse
me. Distracting.
Yeah, distracting. The player's busy, blah, blah. So
right.
I think if they get it done before next offseason, it's got to be in the next 6 weeks. Because if it's not then I think we should all panic.
Oh, man. Thanks for putting a clock on it, Liz.
You're welcome. Anytime.
Officially, the countdown to panic has begun.
Here to help.
It is day one of Philly spring training.
Feel good, everyone. Feel good about the season. And
I mean, you're right, though. I mean, that would be staggering and very sad.
People don't want to hear what I have to say, but you're going to have to.
You don't want to hear about me being, you know...
I try not to be negative. I try to be realistic.
There's not one Phillies fan who doesn't want this team to lock up JT Realmuto before the end of spring training. And there's not one Phillies fan who wouldn't be at least a little bit concerned if they didn't. Nothing you're saying is negative. It's just reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they haven't locked him up yet. You know, if you're a Phillies fan, yeah, you can be relaxed about it and assume that they will. And I assume that they will, too. But just the fact that they haven't yet makes me worry because I want it to happen. But we've only lived in a world where it hasn't happened. That's the only experience I have on this particular issue. So I would like to see that reversed as soon as possible, as would anyone listening to this, I would assume, because I'm not sure what you're even thinking about when you're thinking about a Phillies team at catcher without JT Realmuto. Mm. I mean, that's a hell of a thing to say about a guy who was here for 1 year when they didn't make the playoffs. Yeah.
That's how important he is.
What was that?
I said, that's how important he is.
Yes, exactly. So if we shouldn't be concerned about that, Liz, do you have any real concerns on this first day of spring training moving forward? Or is it just pure excitement? Like, is your concerns outside of JT Realmuto? Or are we just like, baseball, let's play some and see what we got?
I mean, I have concerns. I think everyone knows.
I gave you an opening there and you just walked right by it.
I know.
All right.
I was saying,
lay it on us.
I do have concerns. But I really am just excited that they're playing baseball. That we get, like, Joe Girardi. I cannot forget this because it's been so easy over the past few months to take Joe Girardi for granted because, you know, no one's playing any baseball. But Joe Girardi is not Gabe Kapler, and that is something that I'm going to celebrate a lot. Gabe Kapler is far away. And Joe Girardi is here, and everyone seems to like him. He seems to be setting the right tone. He had everyone practice their home run trots, which was adorable.
Yeah, relief pitchers. Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That was so cute. I really loved it because, you know, you can have fun. You can have some fun in this job without it being the regimented type of fun that Gabe Kapler wanted for everyone. Yeah, I think what I saw someone give a quote, like, you know, Joe Girardi didn't just speak to our minds, he spoke to our hearts. And I'm like, oh, God, sports dudes love being corny. It's the best.
That is so corny, but I'm smiling.
I know. It's like, you know, athletes speak in cliches. All of them do it. And sometimes it's just cute.
And hopefully the Phillies have many more cliches to spew from the mouth of JT Realmuto in the years ahead. I'm sure they will. There's nothing to fear, folks. Day one, JT Realmuto. The Fanatic is fine. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, have a quick discussion about some other things that are not being discussed at Phillies training camp right after this break. Liz, we all know what we've been talking about. Obviously, the Fanatic changing news was huge yesterday, kind of burned up the afternoon in a hurry. The JT Realmuto thread has dominated a bit of the headlines just because of the fact that, you know, as we said, we want to see him locked up as soon as possible. You know, various other training camp threads. Liz, I mean, what else is out there? McCutcheon rehabbing and getting better. I don't know. I mean, what else do you recall as being like the main threads of this? Because it's been dramatically, no one thing has been particularly dramatic, I guess you could say, in Philly's country. I would say no one likes talking about it, but the Odubel Herrera thread is there. Like, that's something, and we're going to have to deal with it. We're going to see him in a Phillies uniform on the field, I think. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
I don't think the team is very interested in having him, but, you know, at this point, because of CBA reasons, he's got to be there at least for a minute. So, that's something that's been around the team as they headed into spring training. I mean, are there any narrative threads you feel like we've missed, or anything you've had a particular interest in that hasn't been getting the coverage?
I mean, there's the continued the continued Arrieta stuff of him, mm-hmm. you know, proclaiming I'm back. I guess I'm just sort of waiting to see how that turns into a failure this year.
Well, do you think, I mean, hey, look, I'm not saying I bought into it, but this year he did a little more than just like throw a fastball, then look into the camera wearing sunglasses and go like, I'm back. That's right. And then like AC/DC starts playing and you know, then he, you know, has a 5 ERA after the first 2 months of the season. I was more, I guess you could say, encouraged by the fact that Aaron Nola mm-hmm. and then Arrieta all kind of went off indirectly on the previous regime and what they were being told to throw and what they were being instructed to throw. And
indirectly.
And it went. I mean, they didn't say his name, I guess, is my point.
Exactly. It was, we're going to excessively praise the new pitching coach, Brian Price. We're going to do it a lot and obviously and talk about the past and what happened last year very vaguely, just so everyone mm-hmm. knows. It's like that's as close as these guys get to actually directly shitting on someone. But that's that's as close as they've gotten, and that's pretty good because you could tell how deeply unhappy Aaron Nola was last year by the intensity of his comments and the fact that his comments exist because he's not a real talkative dude.
Yeah, it's been, and that's what I mean. When Arrieta was saying, look, we can throw fastballs again, you know, we're not being forced to throw fastballs up in the zone because that's what somebody's algorithm says. Like, you're pitching to your strengths, what you are. For some guys, that is the move. For other guys, it's not the move. And I felt like he talked less about himself and talked more about Zach Eflin, which is something we've kind of put together since the end of last year, that when he decided I'm going to throw my sinker again, he started seeing more success. And Arrieta pretty much confirmed that in his own opinion, saying that, like, yeah, I love Aaron Nola, Zach Wheeler, great pitchers, but I'm most excited about Zach Eflin. Everybody should be excited about this guy. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, he closed out the story Jim Salisbury wrote on him saying these kind of things about, like, hey, Zach Eflin might be fully unlocked and weaponized for the whole season. And, you know, 1 year we assumed Vince Velasquez would be the guy. Last year we assumed Nick Pivetta would be the guy. I guess it's Zach Eflin's turn, but I'm a little more encouraged by Zach Eflin. I think of the blur of pitchers at the back of the Phillies rotation the past couple of years, I mean, Vince Velasquez has the raw velocity, but he throws a ton of pitches. Nick Pivetta was probably broken a bit by the miscommunications and chaos of last year and just didn't have the stuff to be effective. Meanwhile, Zach Eflin is it fair to say over the stretch that all these guys have been here, Zach Eflin's probably had the most quote-unquote prolonged success?
I agree.
As far as, yeah.
I mean, I'm a longtime Eflin stan. I've no love for Pivetta. I am all about, you know, Zach Eflin being the best pitcher of those, of that blur of dudes from the last regime. So I completely agree. I'm looking forward to him. The fact that he was able to pull himself out of what was happening and ignore the words that were being said to him and sort of do his own thing, I think speaks very highly of him. And his feeling for what he's doing and his abilities in general, because not a lot of pitchers can do that. You know, they're being told by someone, do it this way. They do it that way. So I have a lot of, I'm very impressed by that. And I would like it if he did well this year. I really want him to do well this year. I really would love it for everyone to stop talking about Nick Pivetta. I think that's what I want more than anything. Good luck to him and his future, but somewhere else.
If any listener wants to go back a couple of months and find the several episodes where Liz and I both say, get Pivetta, Velasquez, Eflin, kick them all off that team. Get them out of here. We're sick of this. Fix the problem. You should feel free to do that. But it's the dawn of spring training, and everything is forgotten. The entire board has been erased behind us, and I think we can root for Zach Eflin guilt-free because, yeah, I think there's reasons to be encouraged by that, more so than I think there are reasons to be encouraged by Jake Arrieta. But I guess circling back to what my original point was, that I'm more encouraged by the fact that Arrieta is saying there was something that was really clouding our effectiveness last year, and that thing is gone. And granted, I'm sure he's said some version of that every year we've heard the Jake Arrieta is back narrative, but I don't know. I'm not saying this felt different. It was just like a reminder that, like, hey, yeah, at least some of these guys, even if it's not Jake Arrieta, will probably see a benefit of this. And that's something we've been talking about since Joe Girardi came in, and you know, we got a new pitching coach and we got a new hitting coach, and the idea that leadership kind of trickles down and the culture that could be set is going to be different from Gabe Kapler's because of how much focus he put on culture. It's going to be different for these guys. They're going to be playing in a different environment than in 2018 and 2019, and I think it's going to be a better one. And I think that's going to be one of the products of that is you know, pitchers throwing the pitches they want to pitch.
Yeah.
That's a good start. But elsewhere in training camp, a story in the New York Post tells us that Bryce Harper is really enjoying being an afterthought this spring. And it occurred to me that, oh, yeah, there's always this steady pulse of Bryce Harper coming out of Philadelphia. And I think signing him, that was sort of the intention. We talked about on the last hit in season how it's not surprising that Bryce seems to serve occasionally as just a team ambassador, talking about front office moves or potentially, you know, no proof of this, but I'm assuming getting like maybe a vague talking point or two from a team rep saying like, hey, if they ask you about this, just say this, do us a favor. Doesn't seem crazy that that would go down, but he is something of a secondary story this year after being the entire story last year. And I don't know. I mean, how do you think he I mean, he says he likes, he enjoys this, that he says, he tells the reporter in the New York Post, it's actually kind of nice. Cameras aren't all over the place. You're not seeing ESPN and Fox every single day. You don't have all these trucks and craziness going on. Everybody can just focus on our team and not really just focus on myself. I think it's better for everybody in this clubhouse. I mean, I like it.
Yeah,
I think that's probably healthy for everybody. You know, you talk about a distraction. Sometimes people use that word and it sounds absolutely stupid, but the situation he describes really sounds like a distraction. Now the biggest thing people have to be distracted about in regards to Bryce Harper is his hair and how much he looks like Jason Worth now. But I mean, yeah, I mean, are you enjoying not hearing as much about Bryce Harper this spring?
I think so. It's nice. It's not, you know, he's not the singular focus of the team anymore. There's a lot more beyond him, and I think that's good. I think it's healthy.
Right.
And I'm happy, you know, I'm happy for him because he must really feel like he's started his real life now. Like his actual, you know, he's married, he has a kid, they live, you know, they've picked out where they're living for the next few years. He's got a job that he's gonna have for the next 10 years. You know, he's gotta feel really settled and really good. And, you know, for a baseball player who doesn't get to choose where they go for the first, you know, 6-8 years of their career, you know, I'm happy for him.
Yeah. And yeah, hopefully the relaxed atmosphere translates into good seasons, you know, good season for Bryce, good season for everybody. But, I mean, that's kind of the way it's going to be, I think, moving forward. Presumably Bryce Harper's going to just be an assumed pillar of this team, and we got, you know, over 10 years of that coming. So
yeah.
Presumably there's going to be a lot of spring trainings like this. So yeah, I think there's no reason to feel gutted going into Philly's spring training camp. Look, there's not even a real reason to feel outwardly negative.
No, there's not.
I think, well, except for the Fanatic thing, that I think you can feel negative about and be warranted. But everything else, you know, hey, baseball starts today. We're not going to see, you know, we're not going to see Bryce or JT today, but we're going to start seeing more and more of the Phillies we want to see moving forward. There's going to be some fun spring training narratives coming out of training camp, and we at Hittin' Season will be all over it. So don't forget to subscribe, rate, and download all your favorite podcasts that are part of the Good Fight podcast family, including Hittin' Season with John Stolness, this podcast, Continued Success with myself and Liz Rocher, and The Dirty Inning with me and Dr. Trevor Strunk, a historical look back at Phillies' futility throughout the course of their history. We have a tremendous episode coming up that deals with baseball justice, something we have not seen act very swiftly this offseason in response to the Astros cheating scandal. Little did you know, the Phillies had someone who once crossed the line as far as baseball integrity goes, and justice came down on that person swiftly and aggressively, and we will tell that story on the next episode of The Dirty Inning. Very much looking forward to that. We also have a Patreon you may have heard of, patreon.com/hittin'season. Always something new going up on there. Me and Chris Jones have a show called Absolutely Hammered, an unfiltered and frequently profane look at the goings-on of both Phillies and baseball in general. Liz and Chris and I are going to be doing a movie review, another one of our baseball movie reviews that will appear on there for patrons only. And John Stolness is always experimenting with video content, baseball card stuff, putting his radio appearances on there. So it's well worth the only $5 that it costs to subscribe for a month of all of that stuff.
And when you subscribe, you get access to our entire back catalog. Don't forget.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Go back and binge listen to all of these episodes.
Including the weird experimental stuff Justin and I did when we were just trying to figure out what to put on the Patreon. Enjoy.
Yeah, don't blame us. We were taking some big swings, all right? Just leave us. Just shut up, all right? Shut up. And look forward to the weeks ahead with tons and tons of Phillies coverage and conversations and narratives and what have yous as the season gets underway. We're really looking forward to it, and you should too. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Continued Success.